702. Education.
Silas Pillay is my guest, director at director of academics at the Love Trust. Silas, thank you so much for joining me once again. So really appreciate your time.
Aubrey, always a pleasure to engage in conversation with you.
Let's talk a little bit about children and how they learn best. Perhaps you could give me a sense of sort of what age group are we talking about here when we speak of children? How do children learn best, and who are these children?
Yep, so I think we're looking at children as early as in the early childhood development phase, starting from grade 000, moving up to the reception year in grade R, and then obviously all the way through. But when we look at children at that early age as well, we know and recognize at that stage that no child is the same. We're looking at a unique individual with learning preferences, whether that be visual, auditory, whatever mode, you know, kind of aesthetic. Some learn through play. I heard you referring to that just before we kicked off.
Mm.
And obviously, the best way that a child would learn, according to the research that's currently also doing its rounds, is through a multimodal approach. So this entails essentially a teacher combining various styles of teaching to convey and explain complex different concepts that the child then has a better opportunity and mode of gaining this learning experience and knowledge from this process that we actually inspire to bring through at our Love Trust teacher training program for our learners and our adult beneficiaries.
I hear sometimes people say to me that children, or we underestimate the ability of children, specifically in the early childhood development stage, and maybe a little older, right? We underestimate their capacity for learning complex concepts. And then there are those who hold the worldview that, no, children don't have the capacity to understand complex concepts. And we'll talk about what those can be. What is your view about the capacity for children to imbibe complex ideas?
Yep, I think fully agree that I think we marginalize and underestimate the impact of learning at that early childhood development phase, what is happening inside the learner's mindset and physical development, psychological, and then cognitive is something that is critical. I mean, at that early stage of development, children are already beginning to understand some concepts of solving problems, of variables changing, of imagining what happens with manipulation, through games. And I think that's becoming more and more pronounced now. And, of course, just gaining those early self-awareness, emotional relationship-building type of foundation. And for me, those areas have been the traditionally marginalized areas.
Yeah.
It is set back in the education where we need to reimagine where the learning critically begins, and that scaffolding, that foundation, is what sets the actual platform for children's minds to then, as they progress, grasp bigger problem solving, creativity, imaginations, and more abstract concepts coming into play at later years.
And what is the worldview at the moment? I mean, what is the approach when teaching children? Is it one that is fundamentally based on the idea that no, children don't understand some of the concepts that you've just mentioned now, and so we've got to sort of ease into stuff? Or are there approaches, schools of thought that say we just need to have the right kind of scaffolding, we need to have the right kind of pedagogics to be able to convey that information, rather than or yeah, convey the complex information to the child rather than shield the child from that information. I mean, I remember Silas as a child, and you'll remember back in the Bantu education days that children, particularly in the townships and the villages, were taught some of the haunt bluff. And no real conceptual stuff. And my understanding about that is that it was based on a school of thought that children simply don't have the capacity to understand certain complex concepts. And maybe it was a racist thing. I don't know. Maybe, you know, I mean, that it happened in mostly, you know, black areas and so forth. But I watch in other areas where children are taught really complex ideas, complex ideas to the point where children learn about touch, about the different feelings that you feel and just those kinds of things that children are taught about, consistency of certain things that you touch and feel. And I mean, those are pretty complex ideas. What is mm-hmm. the general idea at the moment in our education system and the approach to teaching children? Is it that children are just dumb, or is it that we need to find better ways of teaching children these complex ideas?
I think definitely agree with you that perception shapes outcome. Essentially, I think studies have shown that expectations of teachers on their students, on their learners, however younger or older they may be, directly affects the performance of those learners. And it's becoming increasingly made aware to educational practitioners that there's no real issue of a child being what we would say, like you said, unable to learn, slow, for lack of better words, unable to grasp the concepts. I think it's actually the focus is increasingly on the teacher's ability to provide varied learning opportunities, to be more skilled, to elicit this type of response from learners. I mean, this transformation and reimagined educational view is coming into play now, where this issue of just preparing a child for a final exam and looking at our old method of chalk and talk and just expecting, regurgitation of what is out there. I mean, that's not conducive. It's not aligned to 21st century skills of critical thinking, of collaboration, of decision making and teamwork and all of these wonderful things we hear. And the younger one approaches this, the earlier that we start getting children. I mean, if you look at our South African context, like you're saying, I mean, the Department of Education has just made quite a heightened stance on robotics and coding being involved as early as the reception year is going up. And for example, our feeder of vulnerable children from the Timbisa community at our flagship school, we're aware that they come in with various barriers to learning that can be psychosocial, it can be physical barriers, but that does not prevent us from having a high expectations model. It just means that the learning space needs to be more varied. And like you're saying, to engage those children's minds, maybe there is a deficit in terms of exposure to games, to technology, to the personalized teaching approach. That is then incumbent on the school and or the educator. Or obviously the teamwork approach with the parent is the best preferred. And so this multimodal approach is what can make that change from early phases, like I said, as early as 3 going forward. In fact, the first 6 years are the formative years of the child's education journey. And if one lets that go past, you've really got a setback.
Give us a call at 011-883-0702 as I speak to Silas Pele. We're speaking about children, particularly in the early childhood development phase. If you have a child at that space, in that age, what are the approaches to teaching, particularly concepts that could be understood to be complex? What approach does the institution where your child is taught take? As I speak to Silas Pele, I'd love to take your calls on 011-883-0702. Why is this important, Silas? I mean, you've already touched on it by saying that, you know, the formative years are critical in how we sort of create the right architecture for the child's intellectual development going forward. Mm-hmm. But why is it important?
Because, Aubrey, children, I think this branding, like you said, you know, you alluded to the inequities of society and the previous education systems being totally poles apart. And that disparity in education starts as early as this, where a child is labeled in terms of the system as a child who is slow, a child who is unable to grasp that. And that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And actually, the real challenge is that there's not that quality of education delivery because of the inequities. And so a personalized teaching approach, smaller class sizes, one-on-one, you know, learners have specific needs. It's the lack of the teachers being skilled enough to reach the learners at their level, or to go to backtrack and get them up to par with what they've missed out on.
Yeah.
And then the lack of resources. I mean, like you rightfully said, we still have a disparity. And the Love Trust acknowledges this. And this is why our whole approach is to provide quality, values-based education to children from disadvantaged, vulnerable backgrounds. I think if we have that as the trigger, as the main focus, then we will actually then backtrack and get the problems addressed at the root level, rather than spend loads of money and time trying to address things at the higher levels when the foundations have not been sorted.
So
games, playing through games, having a lot of toys as early as that stage. I mean, if you look at a print-rich classroom, if you look at books being available at home for children to be stimulated, those are deficits that sets children back. And then this inequity that we're trying to resolve is not going to be caught up if we don't address this at that grassroots level.
Give me a call at 011-883-0702. Is that something that is important to you as to the foundation, yeah, that is laid for your child's intellectual development, academic development? Or do you say, that stuff is only important at a later stage, not now? Let the child play, man, you know? Are we being too serious about this, Silas? I mean, there are schools of thought that say, listen, just let the child be a child, man. Let them jump up and down and break something. You know what I mean? And then there are those that are pretty serious about this. I mean, I know that in Japan, early childhood development stage is taken perhaps even more seriously sometimes than all of the other stages, precisely because of the tone it sets for the child's later life. But then there are those who argue that, come on, that's when the child needs to be learning other aspects of life than academics. Your thoughts?
Yep, I think I also, from my personal perspective, having taught abroad as well and looked at teacher development, types of practices and teaching modes overseas. I'm talking about China and, Singapore, if we look at countries that have really pushed forward. Children's experiences with learning, now it doesn't have to be, this misconception that when we're talking preschool education being formal, this is not what we're saying. It just needs to be structured. So there's still a whole lot of games, there's still a whole lot of sport, learning through play and manipulation, but there has to be a skilled teacher that has a trajectory, and our parents also walking that process of making sure they don't need to have a high level of academic accolades to their name, but they do need to know the value of playing with their child, of allowing certain constructive play. For example, we would provide Lego blocks for families. We've done that from our grade triple noughts all the way to grade R and grade one to make sure that whatever is happening at home complements what is happening at school. And the child is then able to use these manipulatives. If there is just the play area without a structured approach, then you could see the child actually being misaligned, yeah, and then not even being exposed to pictures, to the visuals that lead to it, the storytelling aspects, and then your fine motor and your physical side of it, development is also hampered if the child is not able to be exposed to all of these areas that are critical for their development. So I don't think we're underplaying it. I think we've actually fallen behind. However, what is appraising to see is that our department has prioritized this. I mean, the fact that the early childhood development sector has moved under the banner of the Department of Education, that has happened this year, and I think the more impetus we take in terms of structuring this, of making sure that our ECD practitioners are trained. The precedent has been that most of our ECDs, especially in the townships and the areas, the suburban areas, have had unqualified ECD practitioners.
Yeah.
I mean, you've had glorified childcare workers there.
Yeah.
And that shows when they transfer into a public school system, which the parents then call big school, but the child is not at the level to be received. And if they are, they have such a backlog that then they are branded. And it's imperative that the first couple of years at the foundation level, we call it the foundation phase, the child is taught how to read, write, so that by the time they reach the end of grade three, they're able to then use that skill of reading to learn.
Yeah.
And that skill of writing too. So you cannot have that backlog marginalized. It's just going to, there's no way that it will make sense for the child and the schools. And this is why we have such a disparity between public schools versus private.
Yeah, yeah. And so what should we be doing nationally? I mean, and again, Silas, we've got the policies, we've got the conversations. What should be happening at a practical level in our schools?
I would say we need to look at a integrated approach of teachers looking at a community initiative with parents of bringing them on par, especially at the earlier stages. I mean, just the involvement of making sure there is this understanding. First, our parents need to engage their children in preschools, in pre-primary, triple naught, double naught classes. Like you said, often that's skipped. It's looked at as a nice to have.
Yeah.
And the child is just brought through to go into a public school or just at the tail end of grade R. And this is why I say there needs to be an advocacy to parents for them to realize the importance of early childhood development, firstly. And then to address the large number of early childhood development centers that are pretty much daycare centers, that are small enterprise businesses, you know, mainly run by South African women, black South African women that are entrepreneurial, that are doing a great job, but do not have the training in some cases,
yeah,
or the staff on there that are accredited. And this is another sector of our program that we found is a key area that needs to be addressed. So you cannot have all those children pushed into a public school. What we need to do is have a public-private partnership. And this is where we welcome partners who share our vision of addressing this grassroots level as the key lever to create a future generation of solid learners. So this is what we need to be looking at from that approach. Obviously, that takes government plus private sector and schools and parents just coming together to create this type of partnership.
Yeah. Silas, anything that we should perhaps leave our listeners with as we part ways? Anything that we haven't touched on that you think we should leave our listeners with as they think about the best way for children to learn?
Yep, I would say definitely look at prioritizing, you know, your child's education above all else. I mean, often parents would think, I'm a caregiver. I'm providing the necessities, and, you know, this is where it ends, especially if it comes to just getting them into a school, a public school. ECD is not a nice to have. It's a need to have. Then parents need to also ensure that they take great pains to make sure that the child's enrollment at an ECD center is one where there's adequate provisioning, and that center is prioritizing their child's learning process. Schools and public should just look at, you know, coming together, and obviously as a Love Trust, this is what we champion. If there are like-minded people out there, institutions or individuals who would want to partner and share this burden of making sure that we address the future generation at that level, and particularly target the teacher training aspect. I think, you know, whether that be government, private partnership, it's something we can all put our heads together and plow into rather our children's future together.
Yeah, yeah. Give us your contact details, please. Silas, would love for anybody who would like to get in touch with you and have more conversation with you.
Yeah, it's our website is www.lovetrust.co.za. We would definitely welcome, like I said, there's numbers there, there's ways that people could be involved, even as far as we have a volunteer basis as well, so then donors could get involved in terms of funding. Obviously, we would welcome long-term donors. We have over 360 kids that are with us currently. We've graduated over three, four classes of grade sevens. We've maintained a pass rate of 98 to 100%, and we've been feeding children who start in these vulnerable circumstances into private schools, St. John's, Oprah Winfrey Academy, etc. So we would definitely welcome that. The number, landline, is 318-2481. If there's anyone who just wants to call through. And then we are on all our local social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, etc., Instagram. Just lovetrust.co.za would be the search.
Silas Pillay, thank you so much for joining us. Director of Academics at the Love Trust, much appreciated.